Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts scene. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and I'm joined today by a longtime friend of the show. He's the author of multiple books and webcomics, including Perspective for Comic Book Artists, Are You Being Watched?, David Chelsea in Love, and Everybody Gets It Wrong and Other Stories. A new version of his sci-fi graphic novel, Welcome to the Zone, is on the way. David Chelsea, welcome back to Words and Pictures.
Oh, thank you so much, Conch.
Well, we want to talk about this project that has been restewing in the works. Before we get going about David's projects today, we do want to offer you, the listener, the opportunity to join KBOO and take home some great thank you gifts when you call toll-free 877-500-KBOO. We have some cool books that are from local and national artists, a Hellboy book, I know that that's there, and some other works that are available. So go ahead, call toll-free 877-500-KBOO and become a member of your community radio station. And let's see, David, nowadays it seems like late 20th century sci-fi is kind of all the rage, and so now you're rebooting a franchise of your own.
You could call it that, yes.
Yeah, tell us about Welcome to the Zone. It was first published a quarter century ago now.
That's right. It was my follow-up to David Chelsea in Love. And
quite a follow-up. Where David Chelsea in Love was kind of as naturalistic as possible, Welcome to the Zone is like straight out like H.R. Giger, just absurdism.
Yes, it was. Well, I had several influences. One was Drew Friedman and the kind of stippled art that he was doing and the way he would work in celebrities. In his case, it was people like Bela Lugosi and Tor Johnson. But, you know, I was using celebrities like Jack Webb and Donald Trump. Another strong influence was a French artist named Jean-Claude Claes, who's still not well known in the States, but he had a very kind of a film noir look to his work. And a strong influence on this book was also John Sayles, of all people. I was very impressed by a movie he did called City of Hope that was set in a small New Jersey town in which a bunch of characters were kind of interacting and there were multiple plot lines that collided. So I was trying to do something like that.
I was sort of thinking this is sort of like if Boone Well had directed John Carpenter's Escape from New York a little bit.
Yes, well, the influences were all over the place. Actually, maybe there was not that much David Chelsea in the book. But I was also, just discovering what comics were really like, or, you know, going to comics conventions and realizing, oh, gee, everybody's into all this sci-fi stuff. I hadn't realized before my first book was published that Slice of Life autobiography was actually not the universe of comics.
Well, let's set the stage here. So you're living in New York in the 80s. You're a native of Portland, right?
That's
here.
Right.
But you moved in the 80s, and the 80s were a time in Manhattan, in the Village, where cartoonists could make a living and pay the rent, or even in some cases, you know, buy into a co-op.
Possibly. I wasn't really a cartoonist in the 80s. I was an illustrator.
You were doing young adult book covers. If somebody grew up and had, you know, the Arrow Book Club in their school, they might have seen a book that you did an illustration for the cover of.
Possibly. I did a number of young adult covers. I did everything. I did illustrations for porn mags. I did illustrations for the Charlie Brown Cyclopedia. I did an English as a Second Language book. All the illustrations for that. Just, you know, everything.
Well, you're doing
as well as storyboards.
Well, you're doing cartoons on the side, and you had cartoonist friends at the National Lampoon. People like Mimi Pond.
I knew a lot of people that I was working for the National Lampoon just as an illustrator, not doing comics. But I knew a lot of comics people at that time. Bill Plimpton was a comics person. He hadn't yet moved into animation. So the 80s was kind of a fun time.
Yeah, and there's a great moment in David Chelsea in Love where a Mimi Pond-like character is dressing you down for not making enough money out of off of your, you know, off of your art.
Yeah, I think she's still making more money than me.
So anyway, okay, Manhattan in the 80s. So this was kind of a New York thing at the time. Drew mm-hmm. Friedman, Peter Cooper, and a fellow named Gary Trudeau were all making fun of this young up-and-coming real estate developer who was sort of changing the face of Manhattan. And, you know, it's kind of prescient, some of the cartoons that were done. And certainly in Welcome to the Zone, there's an appearance of Trump in his pre-politics days. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a shocker. He's kind of becoming an oligarch that's ruling this very dystopian landscape.
Well, he's pushing a development that will tear down a large part of the zone. The zone is the Bohemian neighborhood, which is kind of the East Village, and actually the area that he has his eye on. Is this kind of terraced garden that resembles a place called the Garden of Eden, which was actually torn down in about 1985. There was this East Village character whose name was Adam Purple, who had taken over a vacant lot and had turned it into a garden. And the Garden of Eden was actually torn down to make, I think, low-income housing. So it kind of put low-income housing advocates at odds with, you know, the oddball bohemian side of the East Village. Trump was not involved, but, you know, it sort of made more thematic sense to have him the guy who's destroying the Garden of Eden.
And then you've got aliens involved, and there's lots of not-safe-for-work illustrations and characters in here.
Yeah, I was just kind of going hog wild. I was smoking a lot of weed at the time. And another strong influence on the book is Richard Corbin. I really liked the way that his characters always had that kind of film noir lighting. So it may not be so apparent that he's an influence, but I was, you know, definitely working through a lot of influences, but the developer character is named Ronald Duck, and really, you know, the book kind of owes its rebooting to him, because the book came out in 1995 and, you know, didn't make much of a splash. It was done by Kitchen Sink, and I have a lot of copies. I think I acquired them for free. And I've been bringing them to comics conventions for years and years and years and years and years. And just lately, you know, I've been doing better selling them. Like, you know, as soon as I open the book up and point to Ronald Duck, I say, hey, look, there's a Ronald Duck, there's a Donald Trump character in here. People get more interested. So it got me more interested in doing a new version of it, because I wasn't entirely happy with the way the art looked in the first book, or in the first version. So I have been going back and adding digital gray tones to it, and making it, you know, sort of more tonal than pure black and white.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny that this version of Welcome to the Zone is kind of very gritty. Not all of the shading and the stippling copy well, but that, you know, in this digital age, sometimes that analog glitchiness mm-hmm. is kind of a bonus these days. People love the glitchiness of VHS nowadays, and and some of the old zines, you know, some of the scratchy effects that you get when you overcopy something. But you are taking this. What's your technique now? You're really kind of completely overhauling the art for this new version.
Yeah, what I did is I went back. Okay. This is getting very into the weeds. The original art was drawn on coquille board, which is a kind of stipple textured paper that's used a lot for sports cartoons. So I drew on that in pencil, and then I would Xerox the pencils until they became very, very contrasty and looked like stipple art, and then go back in and maybe add some details in ink. And that was the technique for the first, for the book. What I've done now is I've gone back to my original pencils, scanned them, and instead of adding contrast, I'm trying to keep the tonal look and actually add some gray tones in Photoshop, and that's what the new art looks like. So the new version is I've been serializing on my Patreon page, which maybe your listeners don't know what Patreon is, but it's kind of a marvelous online platform for
a bit of a crowdsourcing thing, but it's like what KABU does with the membership drive. You can pledge a month at a time with KABU, and you can do this the same thing on Patreon for artists.
Yeah, it's kind of inspired by Kickstarter, but instead of trying to raise a lot of money for a big project, it's a way of doing a project that's ongoing and getting small contributions on a weekly or monthly basis, you know, so kind of like a tip jar, kind of like the Death of a Thousand Cuts, but you will sign up as a patron and just commit to paying, you know, an amount every month or so.
So so that's keeping the project going while you're actually doing the redrawing. And then you're looking to publish. Have you got a publisher yet? This is coming out in a few months, I'm hoping.
I'm pitching it to Dark Horse, and I have, you know, a sort of a soft commitment. The book itself is only about 60 pages. It was actually 90 pages in the original, but I did a square format, and I learned very quickly that square formats don't sell well. So I'm doing it as a standard comic size, but that means that it reduces the page count. So the finished book is going to include Welcome to the Zone, but it's also going to include a sequel that I've been working on called Duckland, which is about...
So this is the, you know, after this dystopian future of the early 90s comes true.
Yes.
We now have...
I'm holding my ruffs up to the microphone right now.
All right, yes. It reminds me of going to, you know, Disneyland. You've got the retro future of the 1960s there.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it feels like the 90s, the dystopias that we created back in the 80s and 90s, we're now, they're almost quaint now.
Yes. Well, in this new story, Ronald Duck, the real estate developer, has now been elected president of the United States, and he's built a wall around the zone because it remains, you know, this very scruffy and dangerous patch in you know what is a very Disneyfied Manhattan. So he's decided to contain it and turn it into a maximum security prison. Or actually a minimum security prison. No bars, no walls, or, you know, no guards. Just all the denizens of the zone living in the world that they've made.
Well, we want to talk more about your actual experiences with the extended Trump family while you were doing work for the New York Observer and the New York Times. I want to let people know you're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm live in the studio today with author and comics artist David Chelsea. He's currently rebooting his futuristic dystopian graphic novel from the late 20th century, Welcome to the Zone. And we are in the middle of a membership drive. Want to remind people of that, and you can call in at 877-500-KBOO. So we were playing David Bowie's Modern Love at the top of the show, and you spent many, many years doing illustrations for the Modern Love column.
Yeah, I was the first illustrator for that, which is, it's still running, and now it's a podcast as well. And,
okay.
You know, every so often they'll run one of my old illustrations as accompanying a podcast adaptation of one of those old stories.
Now, this was stories of people who were, you know, hooking up and finding love in interesting and contemporary ways.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I understand, and I may be wrong about this, that the paper altogether stopped offering money for the illustrations at some point. And still, they had artists who lined up to do them.
The New York Times?
Yeah, is that correct?
You know... I did my last illustration for them 10 years ago, and they were still paying money. I don't know if the guy who's doing it now is being paid? I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Because I know him. I knew it's Brian Ray, and I knew him as an art director.
Because I know there are many venues where they're trying to use the coin of exposure.
Oh, know what? I think you misremembered. I told you about the New York Observer. Now I did the 8-day week, which was their calendar page, for 14 years, and. They dropped the 8-day week very soon after Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, bought the paper, and then I noticed that they were starting to run it again and run it with illustrations, and I called the art director up and said, "Hey, any chance I could get to do this again?" And she said, "Well, we're not actually paying the guy who's doing the illustrations. Do you still want to do it?"
So that was your other encounter with members of the Trump family. Was you were a longtime illustrator for the New York Observer, and they had a great run. I mean, they were the sort of sassy kind of, you know, upstart paper in New York, and a lot of people loved them. And it seemed like a really weird mismatch when Jared Kushner took them over.
Well, yes. Well, he wanted to be a media mogul, and that was one way of doing it. I've been listening to the book Fire and Fury, and that goes into a little bit of his history with the New York Observer. I think he bought it for something like $10 million, and the writer said he paid $10 million too much because it had always been a money loser. But it had, prestige. It was read by a lot of, a lot of hip, influential people, and that kind of wasn't the case after he bought it.
And it really covered the whole New York scene, which of course Jared and Ivanka wanted to be part of. They wanted to be noticed in that venue.
It covered a weird slice of the New York scene. It covered real estate developers and the publishing business. But you know, that's very New York, and of course there's nothing like that anywhere else. And so as the illustrator of the calendar page, I was always drawing, you know, birthday parties for these obscure to me real estate celebrities.
So Jared Kushner ran the New York Observer into the ground, and it's now, I think it might have an online presence, but I'm not even sure it does
the
that.
Print edition. Actually, the print edition went for quite a while. I think it ended like maybe 2 years ago, and it's still online, which is more than you can say for the Village Voice, alas.
Yeah, that was a really sad story. That got taken over by, you know, it was another multimillionaire who sort of took that over, said he was going to do God's work with it, and the next thing you know, everybody's gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you were that, what you said about the illustrator who followed you not being paid. I don't usually get up on my soapbox here, but giving away your art for free, unless it's for a really, really good cause, is the equivalent of crossing a picket line. I mean, you're not actually helping yourself in the long run, and you're getting in the way of other people making a living.
Yeah, I knew that guy slightly in New York, but you know, I you know, it's a small gesture, but I haven't friended him on Facebook. I kind of figure that loyalty is a two-way street. And, you know, what the art director said is, you know, we're going through some financial troubles, and I can understand that. But, you know, if I had broken my arm when I was doing illustrations for the New York Observer and couldn't work for 6 months, you know, I wouldn't have expected the paper to have paid me for the weeks I missed.
Right. And as they say, people die of exposure. You know, it's like... The idea that somebody will call you up and say, "Well, you love what you do. Why don't you do it for us?" And you say, "Well, do you love what you do? Why is the board of directors paying you?"
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, illustrators, commercial artists generally, we have to hunt where the ducks are, and you know, jobs paid for with the coin of exposure are decoys.
So you also have a number of books out with 24-Hour Comics. Is the 24-Hour Comics event coming up soon in Portland?
Well, you know, it looks like if there's going to be a 24-Hour Comic event this October, and it's always the first Saturday in October. I might have to do it myself because I looked on the event locator and there's nothing in Oregon.
So if there's other comics artists around that want to meet some of the, some of the really great local cartoonists when they're sleep deprived and have coffee jangles, they should look it up online. 24-hour comics. This is basically. This is basically a comics exercise popularized by Scott McCloud, the author of Understanding Comics, and it's you draw 24 pages in 24 hours straight.
And I should mention, you know, for anybody that has Hulu or Amazon Prime. There's a documentary about 24-hour comics, which features me and a number of other Portland cartoonists, including Paul Guinan, and including my daughter Rebecca,
and a cameo by a local comics journalist.
I think there is one. Good of you to remember that.
So the comic is the graphic novel. Sci-fi dystopia is called Welcome to the Zone.
Yes, and it was published by Kitchen Sink in 1995, and there are still copies floating around for, I don't know, 1 cent or something on eBay. But I've got a lot of other books as well. Most recent one is Sleepless, which was from Dark Horse. It's a collection of 24-hour comics.
And how can people find out more about your work?
Well, I got a website, dchelsea.com. You can also look me up on Facebook. Google everything I do.
Well, the guest once again is David Chelsea. It's great to have you here, David.
Thanks.
And you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. Many thanks to all our listeners. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture. And before we go today, we want to make sure that you, the listener, have an opportunity to become a member of KBOO and take home a one-of-a-kind thank you gift that's been set aside especially for fans of Words and Pictures. Let's see, here are my friends out here with all the details here. Hello, you two. How's everything going?
Yes, we are here asking for support from our members. My name is Jenka, and I'm here with Ray here at KBOO's Fall Membership Drive, and we are asking for your support to help us raise $93,500 by September 22nd. Claim the airwaves. Amplify your voice. Independent media needs you now more than ever. Look on the KBOO app or the KBOO website and click donate. You can also call us. We love to hear the phones ring, and we love to hear you saying, yeah, I'm willing to give $5 a month, $10 a month to help this community effort go for another 50 years. The number to call is 877-500-5266. Become an owner of a radio station right now.
And Jenka, you know, people can call, people can come in via the web, or people can come in person, like Timothy and Marianne from Hillsborough. They're new to the area. They came in person to join the team, join the community here at KBOO. And that just shows the kind of reach, the kind of impact your community radio stations, when folks new to the area pick up and drive from Hillsborough to show their support.
Nice.
And we're asking you to do the same, listeners. You know, hearing shows like Between the Covers and Words and Pictures, this is kind of I referred to it earlier as a cleansing of the palate after some of the more rugged, detailed news and public affairs program you hear earlier. But it's all part of the broad array of programming that comes from KBOO. And wasn't that an interesting conversation with David Chelsea? The man's done everything from young adult book covers to porn magazine covers and everything in between, as well as comics. And you're only hearing that kind of an interview here at KBOO, and we're asking you to support us for another 50 years. Call us at 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and click on that donate button.
You know, thank you to Timothy and Marianne from Hillsborough who came in, and we want to thank you next. Come on down and see us, 20 Southeast 8th. You can see this well-oiled machine in motion. You can see the KBOO volunteers doing their thing. We got Charlie in there putting together some music. We're going to have some great music coming up. KBOO provides this platform for volunteers to get on the air, get trained, and make community radio happen. Being a major donor at KBOO is if you can give a $2,000 contribution, gets you dinner with Amy Goodman and a show. And, of course, the pride of playing a big part in making this University of the Airwaves accessible to everyone. But whether you give $20 or $2,000, either way, you get one vote in our board of directors. You get an equal say in our programming committee. It's a different model from a top-down corporate structure. KABU is a member-led, volunteer-driven station. We are independent and able to speak truth to power only because of our nearly 6,000 members. We want you to be a member in the next 6 minutes. We need $100 more to raise our goal before 12 o'clock. So be a hero for this hour and call us right now. 877-500-5266. We are so close and we're getting there thanks to you.
And Jenka, I have just the incentive that goes along with words and pictures to incent our listeners to make that commitment and join now for a $5 a month commitment, $60 a year. We have two copies of Hellboy. So that, you know, each one of them would bring us over our goal for this show.
Oh, great comic. Great. You know, if you're a listener to Words and Pictures and you know graphic novels, or if you are interested in knowing more, that's a great way to get in on this gift that's only available right now in the next 4 minutes. So it can be yours for your contribution if you call right now, but only right now, 877-500-5266. Get yourself that graphic novel.
And you know, it's Hellboy the Midnight Circus. And you know what, Jenka? It's even a better deal than I first mentioned. I said $60 a year. It's actually only $50, total $50 commitment that can be spread out over the course of the year. And you can have a copy of Hellboy the Midnight Circus.
And we have two of them, and we have $100 to go. So we need two of you to call at $50.
Right, and we have just three more minutes for this to happen. So pick up the phone. Call 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm. But show your commitment, your support, and your desire to be a member here at your community radio station, where you hear everything from locally produced news to Democracy Now! To public affairs and cultural programming. It's all produced by your volunteer news organization. There are about 400 of us here. We know that many of you would like to be able to do it, but you haven't got the time. But you do have the money to become a member and help support your local community radio station. 50 years we've been doing it, 50 more we want to do it, and we will with your help.
You know, Hellboy is a production of Dark Horse Comics, which is a local and supporter of KABU. We're always doing these partnerships with Dark Horse, and their authors come on here, and the artists that do this incredible work, really moving comics into a new realm that is beyond the comics that people sometimes think of. This is a really sophisticated level of artistry, and Hellboy discovering the secrets of his origins and link to Nazi occultists who promise Hitler a final solution in the form of a demonic avatar. This is the basis of director Guillermo del Toro's blockbuster film. So definitely get in on that. We've only got a minute left, so phone line is open. If you can make that call right now, 877-500-5266.
And Jenka, you're right. We have three of our phone people on the line now, but there's one person there waiting for your call, and this is your opportunity. You can get Hellboy the Midnight Circus for a annual commitment, a one-time commitment, or spread it out across 12 months, but just $50 will get you Hellboy the Midnight Circus. So give us a call, 877-500-5266. Once more, 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm and click on that donate button, but do it now.